Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast. We're your favorite THW contributors to discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday through Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Kyle Knopp, and today I'm joined by Kerry Collins and Colin Newby. Kerry, how are you doing today? Your Colorado Avalanche are on the brink of their third Stanley Cup. What's going on?
Yeah, it's been a pretty fun playoffs to cover them for sure. I don't think many expected a sweep in the last round. And I actually think a lot of people wanted to see more games between those two teams.
Absolutely.
But this is a different animal now. So it should be, I don't know. I think this is a pretty good matchup I think the Rangers would have been fine too, but having a team that's been trying to bust through for the last two decades, particularly heartbreaking last few years in the second round, but against a team that has had no problems at all the last 2 years. So it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we'll get right into that. Before we do, also joined by Colin Newby. How are you today, Colin?
I'm doing good in Philadelphia. We are just waiting for that text notification to pop up on our phones when Barry Trotz decides he wants to make his decision and this coaching carousel works itself out finally.
Yeah, it's, I saw rumors Pete DeBoer is going down to Dallas. Sounds like Trotz is pretty much guaranteed to be in Philadelphia. So it'll be really interesting to see what ends up actually shaking out over the next like to hope over the next week, but probably over the next few months, realistically. So let's dive right into our episode today. And obviously we got Kerry with us today, so we've got to start with the Western Conference champion. Let's take a look at the Stanley Cup final and what are the Avalanche's keys to success for winning their third cup. And obviously, Kerry, we're starting with you. What are the Colorado Avalanche's keys to success for this upcoming series?
Well, geez, least recently it's been score 3 goals on Vasilevsky. So, but I think the keys are they just got to stay doing what they're doing. I mean, I talked a little bit about this in the preview podcast for the series. It's just kind of when they change a little bit and, take their foot off the gas just a little bit, they're not as good. So they've got to just, keep the pedal to the floor here, I think, yeah. And just keep trying to pour it on and play their game. Tampa's really shown that they can play pretty much any style you're going to throw at them. And I don't think they're rattled at all with the recent success they've had. So I think the key is they've just got to keep the big guns have to keep going. Guys like Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, who finally got rolling in the Western Conference final after only scoring one goal and was an empty netter through the first two rounds. And Gabriel Landeskog. I think Gabriel Landeskog's a huge key against a goalie like Vasilevsky, where you kind of need some of those greasy goals. And he can really muck it up in the front, and that's where he does a lot of his damage. So I think Landeskog's a big key, but I think for both teams too, at this time, anytime when it gets this late, if you're playing in June, you got to have depth scoring. So that's got to keep going too. And Colorado's gotten that from guys like JT Compher, Valerie Nichushkin, Arturi Lehkonen's been big too for them. They might not have the points of a Cale Makar or Nathan MacKinnon, but who does? So if your name's not Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl, I guess, but it's, I think that depth scoring, and I think Gabriel Landeskog has to be a big factor in this series for them to win.
Yeah, I mean, obviously having your captain show up in the biggest moments are what you expect out of your leaders. So, that's a good shout out for Landeskog. Colin, I want to come over to you real quick and get your thoughts. Same question. What are your keys to the Avalanche winning their third cup?
I have a similar key here. It's just keep the offense on fire against Vasilevsky. If you look at the Eastern Conference final, Vasilevsky kind of looked human in games 1 and 2. Tampa Bay isn't going to rip off four wins the same way they did against the Rangers. If Colorado jumps out to that kind of lead, it's just going to be a lot more difficult. So Vasilevsky needs to be sharper than he was. I think the lack of that long layoff in this series is going to help. And of course the Avalanche, they do have a similar kind of long layoff after sweeping the Oilers. And then a second one is the question of Nazem Kadri. Can they get him back? What will they get if he is back? Is he 100%? But he provides a good physical game. He's not afraid to get a little bit chippy, get under opponent's skin. And at least so far this postseason, he's looked a little more disciplined than he has in past years.
Yeah, those are great points you brought up. And I mean, you guys both hit some serious keys on the head there in terms of just getting ready and what it takes to win once you get into that, you know, third and fourth series of a long playoff run. So, Colin, I'm going to start with you again. We touched on Vasilevsky. What about for Colorado? Are they turning that net back over to Darcy Kemper, or is this Pavel Francouz's net after he proved that he can come in and shut the door on against a skilled offense?
I would have to think Kemper. I mean, he's been your guy. I also think that Francouz, he didn't necessarily win the series for them. I think you can go ahead and credit that to this just high octane offense, the firepower that they have that Kerry just spoke about. Like, how do you really defend against that if you're Edmonton? That's what won Colorado the series. I think Kemper is the move there.
Okay. And Kerry, same question over to you. Do you think the net gets turned back over to Darcy Kemper, or do you think Pavel Francouz has earned his spot in the crease?
Yeah, I think it's probably – I think Kemper gets the start for sure. He says he's 100% healthy. You saw in that game four, I think he was available. He was on the bench. He was available in case, you know – I would say improbable happened, but that's exactly what happened to them in 2020 where they lost two goalies in one round. So I guess it's not that improbable because it's happened to them within the last couple of years, but I think it's Kemper's net. And I just think that the way Francouz has played, that Jared Bednar knows if there's any hiccup at all, he doesn't feel like it's that big of a cliff of a drop off if they have to go to him. I think he knows he's got a pretty good backup in that situation. I mean, he hasn't lost a game in the playoffs.
Right.
So, and you know, their stats are pretty comparable, but I mean, I agree. They had to score five in front of him a couple of times to win, you know, here and there, but when Kemper's dialed in, he's actually pretty good. It just seems like when Kemper's in there, everything's a little bit more calm.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams could say that when their starter's in compared to their backup, but I just think having a backup like that, you know, has this experience in these, you know, not playoff experience, but experience in these playoffs, knowing that you have that is lets you breathe a little bit easier in case something happens to Kemper. Cause he's gone out twice. I mean, he got poked in the eye with the weird Ryan Johansson one in a million stick shot through the, like the face mask of, or the front of his goalie's mask. And then, you know, this last injury too. So, I mean, in case anything like that happens, I think they know they've got a guy that they can lean on. But I think if Kemper's healthy, yeah, they're going with him.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And for what it's worth, I believe this is Kemper's net heading forward. I mean, this was the goalie that the team went out to get in the offseason to bring on to lead them to the Stanley Cup. So why would they go away from that, now, even though Francouz has done a great job and is – been very capable when need be, but I think you're right. There were a few times the team needed to score a lot more than they would have liked to have in a close game, especially in a game that, you know, Kemper probably wouldn't have needed as much run support. But we'll see. I mean, you know, Tampa we keep saying Tampa's not going to give up a lot of goals. And then you saw Vasilevskiy give up 6 in game 1 against the Rangers. So it is possible that he can give up 6 if they get into a 6-5 type game. But from what we've seen over the last four games, I don't think Tampa's going to be giving up many more than 4 or 5 in one go. So last topic, as we talk about the Colorado Avalanche's keys to winning their third cup, but Kerry, you mentioned this already about depth scoring, and Colorado has a chance to get 2 key depth pieces back in Nazem Kadri and Andrew Cogliano. What's it going to mean to this team to get a player and specifically like Nazem Kadri back in their lineup?
Yeah, I mean, Kadri, he's such a big part of that team for a while there. He was like the only dude on the roster that could win a faceoff. And then he's had such a big year just from a scoring standpoint, one of his best years ever. So getting a guy back like that who's he kind of does a little bit of everything. He's scrappy. He's going to hit you, and he might even get under your skin a little bit. you need those kinds of players. And initially it sounded like he was done for the whole postseason. And then he sort of popped off on a couple of social media posts and said, "Hey, not so fast," and then he was skating again on Sunday. So who knows? I mean, depending on how long the series goes, of course, and I think a lot of people think it's going farther than 4. Depending on how long the series goes, you probably see him back. It wouldn't surprise me just with the narrative that's been going on with him. I'm surprised he was skating again this quickly. And, I don't know if they get him back for game 1, but they might get him back earlier than a lot of people expected just because, the timetable's kind of moved up. So, and then a guy like Cogliano, I'm not a big goal scorer, but he's got a shorty in these playoffs. He's a heck of a penalty killer. And I mean, he's just one of those guys they can throw out there on, and that nuisance line, I like to call it, with, when he's playing with Logan O'Connor and stuff, those guys can really, be kind of a, pain in the side. So, and everybody's banged up right now. I mean, everybody is. So to be able to get some of those pieces back that you kind of leaned on during the regular season, and a guy like Cogliano that they brought in just for that role, that's big for them, I think, especially if they can get Kadri back in any capacity.
Well, anytime you can add a player with grit and sandpaper that can also score, that's especially in the playoffs, that's exactly what you want to do as a team. So two pieces, Cogliano, you said, is more of a role player, but he kills penalties and he does the little things and gets to those dirty areas. And you need players like that in the playoffs. And then we all know what Kadri can bring. Having him in the lineup is definitely going to be a shot in the arm for the Colorado Avalanche. All right. Colin, coming over to you. What are your thoughts on getting Andrew Cogliano and or Nazem Kadri back for the Colorado Avalanche? And what will that mean to their Stanley Cup hopes?
Well, I mentioned earlier that Kadri brings a little bit of that grit, that intensity to get under opponent's skins. With Cogliano, I think that I want to refer to an old quote I heard from Bruce Boudreau. He said that at this point in the playoffs, every team has a great top 2 lines. And I mean, that certainly applies to this year with the Avalanche and the Lightning. Just look at the firepower. But the difference is the bottom 2 lines. Can they match the intensity? Can they supplement what the top 2 lines are giving? I think that's been the key to Tampa's success the last 2 years. You look at some of the guys they brought in, Pat Maroon, and then this year, P. Belmar, Corey Perry. These guys are really doing that. They're supplementing what Stamkos and Kucherov, all that group, can do up front. So if the Avalanche can get those kind of contributions from Cogliano, that can help their chances against a more complete team like Tampa.
That's a great point. And Yeah, we all know Tampa is extremely deep. They've been extremely deep. They lost their whole third line this season and still are coming back with a firepower that has, you know, hasn't been seen in almost 40 years, let's say. So it's going to be interesting, but you both absolutely nailed that point on the head. Depth scoring is extremely key at this point in the playoffs, and it's going to come down to getting those goals from those types of guys in this final. I mean, we saw it last year, Ross Colton with the game winner, you know, against Montreal to lead the Lightning to the Cup. And at that point, he was a rookie and very unheard of. And now, you know, he's starting to cement his place in that lineup. So it's going to be a lot of unsung heroes are going to have to step up. So it will be a lot of fun to watch this week to see who that is. All right.
Yeah, because when you, I mean, one more thing, when you look at that line of Colton, Nick Paul, Corey Perry, I mean, do you really look at them as sort of a bottom six line anymore? Like, they've been so good, and, you know, they play a lot of minutes too. I just think that those guys have been great. Then you have guys like the Cirelli and Killorn line, and I don't know. I just think this is a team that people talk about Colorado's depth scoring. This is a team that goes, I mean, they'd go just as deep down the bench as Colorado does for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They get scoring on every level. And I mean, you have Corey Perry, who used to be, you know, a first line player. He's playing on your third or fourth line. I mean, they really have like a 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B type setup over there. But yeah, and then you have Colton, who is a young player that's proven he can score and get to the dirty areas and do those little things. And then, you know, you have Anthony Cirelli, who's been a proven big game player all the way back from his junior days in the Memorial Cup to winning Stanley Cup clinching goals 2 years ago. So yeah, if you look at that lineup, like you said, look at that roster up and down. I mean, they're deep and they are dangerous. They can attack and score in waves on you. And I think that's a big part of what has gotten them to back to back to back opportunities to raise that cup. All right, moving back over to the Eastern Conference. In game six of the New York Rangers, Tampa Bay Lightning Eastern Conference final, Kaapo Kakko was a healthy scratch and is an upcoming restricted free agent. Gerard Gallant said in his postgame presser that he was just looking for a change, looking to shake his lineups up as he went down the lineup. That was just what he happened to put together. He had to win game six. That was what he was trying to do. Unfortunately, it did not happen, and we did not see Kakko come back on the ice this season. I got to ask you, and Colin, we're going to start with you because you are our Metro specialist, but are Kaapo Kakko's days numbered in New York, or is this something that we are all looking into because there are very few topics to discuss right now?
No, we would never do that. Of course not. But yeah, I think Gallant, I think he was telling the truth, and I don't think it's uncommon for coaches to do that out of desperation. They had a good thing going with the kid line this playoffs. Kakko, he only had 2 goals and 3 assists in 19 playoff games, but I think he stepped into a role where he looked a little more comfortable. He only had 43 games in the regular season, battled a few injuries in and out. But the impression I have coming out of New York, at least from an outsider's perspective, about 90 miles south of MSG, is that a trade probably isn't that likely, but the juicy offer sheet that we seem to speculate about every year around this time is probably the way that could happen.
Okay.
I read something from Molly Walker, who's a former THW contributor, but now with the New York Post. She expects that the Rangers might have trouble matching a big-time offer sheet, and that could be around $4.2 million in AAV and could even go as high as six if a team got really lucrative. If something that extreme comes along, then maybe we could be talking about Kakko getting a change of scenery just a couple years removed from being the number two overall pick. But at this juncture, I don't think it's that likely that he leaves New York.
Good points. And quick curveball at you. If a team were to offer Sheet Kako, which team would you most likely expect that to be?
Which team? So I guess I'd have to go with a rebuilding team that missed the playoffs. Well, not a rebuilding team, but I'm going to throw some juicy drama at you. That's what we do at THW.
That's what. Why do you think we brought this topic up?
How about the New York Islanders? He goes across town to the rival team. Can you imagine?
Going from red, white, and blue to orange and blue. Oh, that would be quite something. And I think that would really add to bringing that rivalry back up to where it used to be in the late 80s, early 90s. So that I think that's a great call out there. And that's exactly why I wanted to put you on the spot. So thank you for thank you for indulging me, Colin. Carrie, over to you. Kapo Kako was a healthy scratch in game 6, and Gerard Gallant kind of alluded to just kind of how the cards happen. So is Kako's days numbered in New York, or is this a nothing burger that we are reaching for straws on?
I just think that Kako was, he had struggled in that series. He had the goal in game 2, but after that goal, he only had one shot over the next 3 games. I mean, he just was generating. He just couldn't get anything going. It was fun to watch the kid line and stuff, but I mean, it just seemed like he was really struggling, especially in those games 3, 4, and 5. And I mean, even in that game that he scored the goal, I don't even think he played 10 minutes. So
yeah,
the writing was probably starting to get scrawled on the wall right there. But I don't know if his days are numbered, but I just think that, you know, that was just a move where, kind of like he said, hey, this is a game we had to win. I had to shake something up. Teams do that all the time. Edmonton did that. I mean, Dylan Holloway got his NHL debut or whatever in that game 4. And then it's just kind of crazy. But I mean, you had to shake some things up, because clearly in games 3, 4, and 5, what they had been doing wasn't working anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Edmonton Oilers situation might have been a little forced because they were without Evander Kane due to the 1-game suspension. But I totally get where your thought process is coming from, and it makes sense. You know, sometimes you need to change things up. Sometimes, the saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But if you're losing 3 games in a row and are now all of a sudden on the brink of elimination, something's broke. So you got to find a way to fix something. And, for what it's worth, I don't think going with Ryan Strome over Kapo Kako, who Strome appeared to be laboring and in pain most of that game, I don't think that was the right choice, in hindsight. But that's why I'm here on the couch on a Tuesday morning talking about this and not, behind the bench making that decision. So it is what it is. I wanted to bring it up just because it's something to look at in terms of Kako being a restricted free agent and kind of feeling, that it might have been shafted a little bit in that game 6. He's young. He's only 22 years old, I believe. No older than 24 if he's older than 22, but he's young. He's 21. Okay. Yeah. So even younger. Like you said, second overall pick a couple of years ago. I could see an offer sheet coming out. I mean, that's just something that any team that has the budget should be doing anyway. One name that kind of was floated around that I got a kick out of, which is why I brought this up to you, Colin, but was the Carolina Hurricanes pulling a similar move to what they did with Kotkaniemi in Montreal last year. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't think Kako's going anywhere. I think the Rangers and Chris Drury are going to do their best to keep that core together. But like I said, it's just something we want to keep our eye on, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So thank you for indulging me with this little fun scenario builder. So, all right. One thing that we can speculate, because as of yesterday, the truth came out. Mikko Koskinen is off to Switzerland. He signed a 2-year deal with HC Lungo. I don't have the team up, and I can't remember. I think it's Luongo, HC Luongo. But he's going to be playing the next 2 years over in Switzerland. Mike Smith just recently said he might retire because his career is uncertain at the age of 40. And Ken Holland mentioned in his presser that he wants a new number one goaltender. So what is going on with the Edmonton Oilers? And Carey, I'm going to start with you. You just recently saw them in a four-game series. But what is going on with the recent Western Conference finalists, Edmonton Oilers, in their goaltending department?
I mean, it didn't surprise me at all that Koskinen left. I mean, I don't think there was that much separation between him and Mike Smith. And then, I mean, they just sort of go all in with Mike Smith last year. And I think if I'm Mikko Koskinen, I'm like, yeah, I'm out of here, you know? Yeah. So, but I don't know what they're going to do. Part of me just says to heck with it. Just go six skaters and see what you can do. That offense. No, just kidding. That's a joke. Clearly, before the comments start flying in. But then, so I just think, you know, they're going to have to go in a completely different direction. And I mean, Mike Smith, I just don't think he's the answer. Clearly. I mean, he had a couple of, you know, real stinkers, and mm-hmm. I mean, there's a 9-goal game and an 8-goal game and between Calgary and Colorado. And I mean, you're going to end up going through those teams probably a lot in the near future if you're in the playoffs in the Western Conference. So, I mean, yeah, he's 40 years old. I mean, this isn't my, you know, we're not a story of the day or article of the day or anything, but there's a great story by Rob Couch about the Oilers trade targets for potentially for goalies going, you know, into this off season. And this story came out a couple of days ago, but one that I thought was really good was John Gibson. I mean, he's been on a couple of really bad teams the last couple of years. But this is a guy that, you know, is an elite goaltender and probably still could be with the right team in front of him. It's just that they don't play defense in Anaheim anymore. And I mean, he just, and then they trade Josh Manson and Hampus Lindholm. So it's like, okay, thanks. You know, if you're the goaltender, but I think that's a really intriguing option for them. You know, if they're clearly rebuilding, and if they can get anything for shipping a guy like Gibson out, I think he's a big step up. And I mean, I think he turns 29 here this summer or later this year or something. And
yeah,
I mean, if you think that's too old, I don't know, or he's on the twilight of his career. I mean, he was 13 when Mike Smith entered the league, so I don't think he's that old. I just think that would be an intriguing option for him. You never know who these guys are looking at or considering or what's even been bandied about or on the table. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Smith leaves, but either way, even if Mike Smith sticks around and they keep him around, they're going to have to bring in somebody else. I just don't think he's the answer there. And they've got in the NHL, you got such a small window, especially with the, you know, they're two top dudes. And even guys like Darnell Nurse and stuff, you have such a small window where you have that core that you can't just be let down because your goaltending stinks.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're so much firepower up front, but it doesn't do any good if, you know, nothing is stopping goals from going in the back end. So you're absolutely right in terms of no one knows what they're going to do, but they have to do something right now. They only have one goaltender under contract for next year. That's from the NHL level. They have Skinner coming up. I believe he got a few games in this season, played mostly in the AHL, but I don't think he's quite ready to take over the reins of the number one or even a 1A, 1B. You know, he's very young. But you're right. In terms of goaltenders, you know, you have Smith, who was 40 this year, and Koskinen, who's 33. So if they look at someone like John Gibson, who's only 28, 29 heading into the season, I mean, that's
he's a spring chicken.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could sign him for a 10-year deal and he'll still be younger than Mike Smith before he's off of that. So that's, you know, great point. They need to do something. It'll be interesting to see.
Stuart Skinner's a good option. It's like, he's young. I think he he probably played a dozen games this year, but he was, wasn't that bad. It's just, I don't know if they're crazy about or wild about handing him the reins to a team that's like, geez, we just made it to the Western Conference Finals. You know, that just seems like quite a, I love gambling, but boy, that seems like quite a gamble, you know, for a guy that's probably played in a dozen games in his career.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it does seem like a gamble, but when you look at the other side and your number one goaltender has already given up, you know, 9 goals a game, 8 goals a game, 6 goals a game. I mean, really, how much of a gamble are you looking at? You were joking about play with 6 forwards, but I mean, is Stuart Skinner really worse than 6 forwards? It's, you know, there's obviously you need a goaltender that's going to compete. You obviously want someone back there that's stopping pucks, but I mean, you know, where is the, you know, where's the risk reward factor come in? If you're willing to go and go all in on Mike Smith, then, you know, why can't that still be put behind a young goalie like Stuart Skinner? So it'll be interesting to see. I think they're going to make a lot of moves this offseason. You know, I think this is the closest they've been in quite a long time. And I feel like this is going to sit really heavy with them. And right now, you know, you look at New York and you say, okay, can you pinpoint what went wrong? And you could point at a couple different places being maybe what went wrong, but in the West, in Edmonton, you can kind of pinpoint that goaltender and say, you know, if we only gave up 4 instead of 6, if we only gave up 3 instead of 5, you know, it's a totally different ball game.
Yeah. And I know what went wrong for New York. They let Andre Vasilevsky get to a clinching game. You can't do that. You can't let him get to 3.
That is extremely true. All right, Colin, before we head over to our articles of the day, I want to get your thoughts on the Edmonton Oilers goaltender situation. Mikko Koskinen is off to Switzerland. Mike Smith might be retiring, and Ken Holland desperately wants a true number one. What are your thoughts on where the state of goaltending lies in Edmonton's future?
Well, first of all, I like that the second time you asked the question, you just said he went to Switzerland. No attempt to to pronounce the Swiss name.
Yeah, you caught on to my style.
But I think Carey made a lot of good points there, especially about Skinner. I think that the Oilers are going to feel the pressure and the need to be aggressive on the market. And you already saw that kind of desperation in the middle of this season when they picked up Evander Kane, a move that I didn't necessarily agree with, but at least paid off in the sense of offensive production, especially in the postseason. So I think they will look at some big names. You guys already mentioned John Gibson. I think Ville Husso might make sense.
Yeah,
even Jack Campbell. That would be some irony of a Canadian market loaded with talent underperforming, but maybe Campbell would be a fit. But everybody loves to talk about big names, but I wanted to point to a phrase that's gotten popular in Philadelphia over the past couple weeks. You can't rob Peter to pay Paul, basically meaning you can't weaken another part of your roster. We've been talking for years about how they need depth behind McDavid and Draisaitl. Well, if you're trading players for a goaltender, you just weakened your depth again behind McDavid and Draisaitl. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out this offseason in Edmonton.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come down to what they can afford cap-wise too, because, I mean, their top players are eating a ton of cap space. You know, you got to pay the McDavid's and the Draisaitl's the money they deserve. And then you have a huge contract that was spent on Nurse for some, you know, unknown reason. But that's not what we're talking about here. So what we're talking about is goaltending. So they only have a little bit of space to go after a big goaltender if they really want to throw money at them. And then, like you said, that's going to weaken their opportunity to really get that depth scoring that they still desperately need as well. So excellent point, Colin. Any other mentions about the goaltending situation in Edmonton before we move on, Colin or Carey?
Ready to go to articles.
All right.
Oh, that's good.
Well, our article, our favorite topic, our article of the day, I must have been reading Carey's mind because he brought up a name in that goaltender potential free agency market and or trade. And my article is by Alex Hobson, and it is titled Maple Leafs Should Consider Gibson Trade for the Right Price. So Alex wrote an article that came out yesterday about how the Maple Leafs should go after Gibson if the trade is at the right price. And so he lays out a pretty good article just talking about all of a sudden John Gibson's name was brought up yesterday, and now he is the talk of the town in terms of goaltenders that are available right now. I think you alluded to Campbell possibly being available as well. And I think he would help a team like Edmonton, but right now in Toronto, they are looking at potentially going in different directions. So like I said, Alex lays this out. He talks about Gibson's career with the Ducks. He talks about the potential return that Anaheim might want, you know, the risks that that would have and what Maple Leafs might be willing to give up to get him. So, you know, go check this out. I don't want to give away any of the big keys to this article because it's laid out really well. And Alex did a good job of researching all these topics, but that is Maple Leafs Should Consider Gibson Trade for the Right Price by Alex Hobson. And Carey, we will come over to you. What is your article of today?
Yeah, my article of the day is Avalanche Lightning, just the Stanley Cup final preview. It's done by one of my fellow Avalanche writers, I guess, Marco Zamyslyk. I don't know if this is why I write, so I don't have to pronounce this stuff, but yeah, Marco Zamyslyk, if you like advanced analytics, this guy is your guy. And he goes way into the deep end here. I mean, it's a deep dive into everything from comparing, penalty kills and power plays, forward depth, things like that. I mean, he talks about, you know, how Colorado's, you know, defensemen like to jump up into the zone, but the Lightning forecheck is just incredible. So, I mean, he's taking on all sorts of different things that all right down to, you know, which team's got the better neutral zone transition. So if you like that deep dive stuff, which I think is evident if you've heard me give stories of the day before. I mean, I like that stuff, kind of getting as granular as possible without losing too, you know, getting your eyes crossed in statistics. This is really good. And it's laid out really well. It's a little bit longer. I think it took me about 10, 12 minutes to read, but it's a little bit longer, but it's a really good look at the strengths of, you know, the Colorado compared to the strengths of Tampa Bay and how those things could shake out.
Yeah, no, this was a great article by Marco. And like you said, he does a fantastic job of just going into the deepest of dives and looking, like you said, at all these little games within the games, you know, the neutral zone transition versus the zone entry defense, the forecheck versus the breakout in the defensive zone. So yeah, you're absolutely right. This was a fantastic article. Marco's really big into the advanced metrics, which is, you know, for someone like me, it's old school and doesn't get a lot of those metrics, to be able to have someone that is really into them and can lay them out and can kind of explain what each means, but also why they're important. I enjoy reading those types of things. So
that's for sure a big strength of his is, I mean, he's taking a lot of these statistics that many people are thinking the weeds, and he's making it easier to get, like you can get it, you know, you understand it. So that is particularly in this one. That's why this is such a good read. That's why I picked it today.
And I can attest to it too. I think he does a great job of extrapolating stats.
Yes,
where you can go beyond points. He does per 60 for a lot of his stats. Always love to read Marco's stuff. It's a pleasure to edit it when I get the opportunity.
Yeah, he is a fantastic writer, and you can tell he puts a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into all of his work. So great article of the day, Carey. Like you said, make sure you check that out. If you want, you know, we gave a little bit of a deep dive into the keys for the Avalanche. Marco gives even deeper of a dive. So make sure to check that out if you want to know more about what is in store for the Avalanche and Lightning in this year's Stanley Cup final. All right, Colin, over to you. What is your article of today?
So I have four lessons rebuilding teams can learn from the Final Four. This is by Mike Fink. And I think it's the type of conversation that comes up every year. Just looking through the lens of teams who miss the playoffs when the Stanley Cup is going on. Mm-hmm. But he talks about four elements of these teams. The first is star power. So you add McDavid and Draisaitl, MacKinnon and Makar, the incredible top-end talent the Lightning have assembled. Star power is a main necessity for the best teams in the league. Second one, not chasing that talent in free agency or at the trade deadline. I thought this part was the most interesting, and he put a really good example in here of the Sharks bringing in Erik Karlsson and overpaying for him a few years ago. Sharks are no longer a contender, and they're stuck with a bad contract. Then also with trade deadline acquisitions, if you look at a lot of these teams, they acquired supplementary pieces at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
They didn't get their top line players. They had their structure in place and they added around it depth scoring, third pair defensemen. Sometimes those are the best additions, not the big names at the trade deadline. Third one, puck moving defensemen. That's something we discussed at length last week when Mike was on the show.
Yeah.
And Cal Makar and Adam Fox in the conference finals, they were two of the best to do it in the NHL this year. You also have Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh in the cup. Puck moving defensemen are a necessity to building one of these teams. And the last, goaltending. That's the easy one. It's the ultimate X factor in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Absolutely. And I think when you brought up the going after the free agency and trade deadline acquisitions and the Erik Karlsson, example, that was such a good pull by Mike and that comparison, because if you look or read anything on San Jose or from their fans right now, a lot of those fans are upset at that Erik Karlsson contract, and they want to be out from under it right now. And they feel like he and that contract are what's really have brought this team down, which is interesting because not too long ago, he was the key piece that was supposed to bring them back to that Stanley Cup final, and it just never worked out. So great call out for your article of the day. We've had Mike Fink on this show quite a few times. We actually had him on to discuss one of his articles a week or so ago. And he's another one of our great writers here at the Hockey Writers, but that shouldn't come as a surprise because all of our writers are great writers here at the Hockey Writers.
I'm flattered.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great writers at thehockeywriters.com. From Kyle Knopp, Carey Collins, and Colin Newby, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.